Thank you for inviting me for this discussion on spiritual perspectives on sociobiology and the position of science in human society at large. So three things I think we'll broadly discuss. What is sociobiology? How does sociobiology stand in the overall vision of humanity, and how can humanity evolve to create a better future? So specifically, correct me if I'm wrong, sociobiology refers to the application of evolutionary biology to social organization. This is a term invented by E.O. Wilson, and broadly you could say that some people, at least including at times E.O. Wilson, have used it as the biological version of the theory of everything, that science, the theory of everything, not exactly in the sense of cosmic origins, in terms of origins of human behavior and the emergence of social organizations. Yeah. Okay. No, my purpose is to not caricature but to contextualize, so that we understand why this is at all relevant to us in our discussion. So sociobiology, there has been, it is, you could say, the summit of the, or one summit in the evolving understanding of the role of science in human society. So Francis Bacon, one of the pioneers of the scientific method, he envisioned science as a tool for improving humanity's moral condition, material condition. In fact, initial science which evolved in the Western world was theistic, and they said that just as Jesus could elevate people's spiritual condition, science could elevate people's material condition. So we could say spiritual condition, or the word could be used in moral condition, that people tend to do terrible things and that hurts us. So we can say that, broadly speaking, the hurts in the world come from two sources. One is the natural forces, the second is the human agents. That means, say, when a natural calamity occurs, there's the earthquake or the storm, a tornado, that's one source of evil. The second source of distress, you can use the word evil or not, is humans. At individual level, people may abuse and hurt each other. At a collective level, power-hungry kings may go on rampages to conquer kingdoms and cause the death of thousands. And now with the weapons of mass destruction available, millions also. So initially, science was thought as a means to improve people's material conditions. That means nature provides a certain level of comforts. We could increase those comforts through science and technology. And nature provides a certain amount of distresses, and we could decrease those distresses. But as the discussion, as science became successful, at least in some sense, in through technology transforming and improving people's material condition, the hope of what science could do increased further. And that led to the promise that science could improve people's moral condition also. That means people could behave better. Could be made to behave better. At one level, there are Western thinkers, for example, Immanuel Kant, who's pointed out that Kant, that is, Kant pointed out that actually you cannot derive an ought from a is. That means to derive values from facts is not easy. We have things, but if say I have $10,000, what should I do with them? There's a is and a ought. Should I use them to maybe buy some stock so that I will have some savings? Should I use them to give them in charity? Should I use them to provide some better toys for my kids? Should I use them to treat myself to some retreat on a hill station? So from a given set of facts, we could derive a number of courses of action. So there is no fixed ought from is. That means materials and morals, so material condition and moral condition, they're not necessarily the same. And there is no one-to-one correspondence between them. Of course, if we are starving and we get some money, then we could say it's obvious, it's a no-brainer that you use the money to get the food. But not all situations, in fact, very few situations in life are that simple. That's why when people get a lot of money, say for example, if suddenly people win a lottery, their material condition improves, but their moral condition, what should you do with the money from a lottery? If that is not clear, then they are not able to really do much with it. So now, where do we turn to? One of the biggest authorities in science is Darwin. And his principle, his theory of evolution has influenced almost every aspect of modern human society and culture, what to speak of science. So some people had the idea that to derive a ought from a is, we should turn to Darwin. That means we should let evolutionary biology shape what we are going to do. Okay. That meant that just as nature has the principle of the survival of the fittest, so maybe among human beings also, some human races are fitter than other human races. Some human races can act, are morally superior to other human races. That is not just physical superiority, but also moral superiority. And some races are burdens for the earth, and some races are treasures for the earth, are the pride of the earth. So nature would anyway eliminate the races that are unfit, that are burdens. But we could use science to accelerate the process of evolution. And this led to the idea of eugenics. Eugenics was social Darwinism, and although that is a theory that is rejected, but that was an attempt to apply science to improve people's moral condition, humanity's moral condition. That means certain species were deemed inferior. Say for example, Nazi Germany deemed Jews to be inferior, even gypsies to be inferior, and made a program to eliminate all of them. Conversely, this was not just a Nazi racist program. It was actually a program which, at least to some extent, derived from itself from science and from evolution. Of course, evolution cannot be blamed alone for it. There is no one cause for complex factors, for complex events. But the principle is that this had its scientific basis. How sound the scientific basis was, that is open to question. Okay. Yeah, so identifying a causal chain between A and B doesn't mean we are saying A is responsible for B. So yeah, there's a book from Darwin to Hitler, and I've read that, but I don't think it's necessary that every Darwinian has to become a Nazi. Definitely not. But we cannot deny that the road to Nazism, the road to Hitler, did have a significant starting point in Hitler, in Darwin. So eugenics, so the idea was that through science, or through what was considered to be science, we could know what ought to be done, that certain races should be promoted. And in fact, say for example, if people are physically handicapped, if people are mentally weak, then they should be forcibly sterilized so that they do not reproduce, and so that they do not continue the reproduction of weak species, weak members of the species. So that in this way, there was an attempt to manipulate humanity to fit into a mold that was considered to be good. But that path led to over a 20 million people dead in the Second World War, 10 to 15 million in the Holocaust itself. So now, the idea that science can improve one's moral condition has not lost weight entirely, but it has come up in a more subtle and possibly a sinister way. That is based on what we could almost say biological determinism. So now the theory, because of postmodernism, is that there is no what ought to be done. All that we have is what is, and whatever is good if you can understand why it is the way it is. That means if we all are basically like biological robots, and we have a particular within us, we have certain inescapable programming which makes us respond in particular ways to events, to the things that happen in life. And biology, because it is determined by survival of the fittest, so whatever biology determines as our response is the best response. So if we could study humanity very carefully, then by careful empirical study guided by the scientific method, we could arrive at a clearer understanding of what our biological imperative is. And thus we could standardize that. So the problem with trying to formulate morality from science is that, first of all, science, if we take biology to define our entire being, then essentially we have no moral choices at all. We don't have the capacity to make moral choices, because if there's an inescapable programming within us which defines how we behave, then why we behave in a different way becomes a mystery. And our capacity to change the way we behave also becomes impossible. If our biology defines our behavior, then our behavior is simply our biological destiny, and it's unchangeable. So, although we might say that somehow we human beings have mysteriously got the evolved consciousness to transcend our biological imperative, but then how we got that, what is it that enables us to transcend our biological imperative, remains a big question.
He may say, no, actually, that if we, with our evolved consciousness, can understand that all human beings, that the other human beings feel pain and pleasure just like us, and therefore we can we should not hurt others, because it also causes, because they hurt the same way we do. But this is not a reasoned conclusion. This is a religious appeal. Why? Because from that same what is, yeah, other people are human beings like me. What ought to be done? I should not hurt them. This is not a necessary imperative, because we could draw reasonable conclusion otherwise also. That means that other people have the same need that I do, and since the earth has only limited resources, if I want to ensure that I and my children don't starve, then I had better eliminate other people while I have the opportunity to. Otherwise it is I who will have to starve. Or I could say that because our race is wealthier, taller, stronger, brainier than other race, so there is that group has to be eliminated so that we will be able to flourish within a finite resources that we have. So although we are all humans, we are all different levels of humans. Our level is higher. Now you might laugh off such reasoning, but people have thousands and millions accepted this kind of reasoning and acted in the past. The point is not that this reasoning is right. The point is that reason itself may not be able to tell us what is wrong with this reasoning. We have a moral sense that doesn't depend only on pure rationality. We have rational and volitional capacities, and our volitional side, volitional is what we make a decision and we act. Now this is something distinct from how we reason. We could do reasoning about our morality, and that's required, but morality itself cannot emerge from reasoning, because reasoning can draw us in different directions, and to adjudicate that between them, reason alone is not enough. We need something more. So for example, we might decide that, oh, we are all human beings and we are all ultimately meant to for survival and flourishing, and morality will be that which furthers survival and flourishing. But what constitutes flourishing? Atheists like Sam Harris acknowledges that we cannot know through biology alone what constitutes flourishing. He says that most of what constitutes human well-being at this moment escapes any narrow Darwinian calculus. Now why does it escape? Because people don't just live based on quality of life indicators. That we are driven by the dictates to procreate and survive and to avoid pain, but we are also driven by something more. We also need meaning. Pain and pain avoidance and survival are not just the sole parameters for which we live. We say we should seek happiness rather than suffering, but what is happiness? Morality is that which furthers happiness and avoids suffering, if we decide that. But how do we define happiness? Is it that okay, a 98.6 degree body temperature, a hearty meal and a steady supply of sex, is that what constitutes happiness? But people who have this are unfulfilled. They want something more. We want meaning, we want fulfillment, and that doesn't come. So what provides meaning and fulfillment is not just some material well-being, and flourishing or well-being is something itself is very difficult to quantify, to reduce to a set of parameters. Now we may say, okay, but at the basic level, that may be subjective, flourishing might be subjective, but survival at least is objective. We should act in a way which promotes each other's survival. So at least we can agree on that level of basic morality. Can we really? Let's do a thought experiment. Suppose we have, suppose say you are the ruler of a country. It's a small country, and people from your country are well adapted culturally, intellectually, and they are very likely to survive and flourish in future based on evolutionary understandings. But you also have your country is small, and around you there are other countries who are not with populations bigger than yours, and they are not as well adapted as you are. But they keep coming into the steady flow of people into your country. And what do? You either wait for the inevitable, that is, your country gets overrun by the other country, and eventually, because their numbers are more, they overrun your citizens, and because they are not so well adapted, eventually they die, so the whole of humanity also dies. Or you are preemptive and you attack the other countries and eliminate those people who are maladaptive over there and populate them with your adaptive people, better adapted people. This might seem the second might seem an entirely reasonable option, but that was the option which impelled Hitler to start the war which eventually caused the Holocaust. So when we have morality, when the highest moral cause is material success, it looks a lot like having no morals at all. And that's why we need morality to come from somewhere else. Morality, reason is a very powerful human resource. But morality and rationality are two different faculties. And rationality cannot produce morality. Morality has to come from something which transcends reason, which transcends rationality. And that's why even in the age of reason and rationality and science, we have a moral side which comes from our spirituality, which comes from a higher source, and which is not reducible to the lower material level. Thank you.